Imagine a toy so iconic it practically wrote the playbook for pleasure. Allow me to introduce or reintroduce you to the Magic Wand, aka the Cadillac of Vibrators. The Magic Wand Original is a trusted companion in the journey of joy. Whether it's your first time chasing an orgasm or you're looking to give your partner a spine-tingling erotic massage, the Magic Wand should be your go-to. With powerful rumbles and several different rhythms and patterns, it's no wonder the Magic Wand has scooped up accolades like Vibrator of the Year for decades. I'm so enamored with mine, I've customized my bedside table just to keep it within arm's reach at all times. But the magic doesn't stop with the original Magic Wand. The Magic Wand family has grown over the years, offering a variety of models to suit every lifestyle. Go cord-free with the Magic Wand Rechargeable. Embrace compact power without compromising intensity with the Magic Wand Mini. I love this Mini. Or the Micro, which is just teeny tiny and really powerful. Or enjoy a range of sensations with the Magic Wand Plus. Each model delivers the same powerful orgasmic rumble that made the original a legend. So are you ready to experience the magic? Visit sexwithemily.com/magicwand and discover why the Magic Wand continues to enchant pleasure seekers around the globe. That's sexwithemily.com/magicwand. Magic Wand, more than just a vibrator. Did you know that your gut is directly connected to your brain and can contribute to anxiety, stress, and depression, which, by the way, can also impact your sexual health? So here's my secret weapon for gut health, Just Thrive Probiotic. Now listen up. Just Thrive isn't just any ordinary probiotic. It is the only one that survives your stomach acid and reaches your gut 100% alive. All those others, the ones that come in fancy drinks or you gotta refrigerate, nope, that's not even a thing. This is the one. I've noticed significant changes to my overall health. Like, this might be TMI, but I'm way more regular and my skin is glowing. Think of Just Thrive like your personal gut gardener. It maintains the health of your gut by weeding out the bad bacteria that causes all those digestive issues and then replenishes the good, making it a total game changer for your digestion, your immune system, your skin, even your mood and sexual health. And if you want to check out my episode with Just Thrive's founder, Tina Anderson, we talk all about how gut bacteria plays a crucial role in your overall happiness, including your sex life. Because a healthy, balanced gut means less stress and more energy. So if you want to check it out, I'm offering a deal for my listeners. You can save 20% off site-wide at justthrivehealth.com with the promo code SEXWITHEMILY. That's 20% off on the probiotic that's truly changing lives and making waves in the wellness community. Everyone's talking about it. Don't just take my word for it. Try it for yourself. Go to justthrivehealth.com. Use promo code SEXWITHEMILY for 20% off.
We can't get mad at our kids if they problem solve, right? The problem they're trying to solve is learning about sex. And if no one's telling them, they're going to use the best resources they have. And we kind of can't get mad at them for doing what we would expect them to do if they were to solve a problem. The thing that's important also to tell your kids, if you're not going to talk about sex, at the very least, you have to tell them that everything else that they do see out there is someone else's fantasy.
Thanks for listening to Sex with Emily. I'm Dr. Emily, and on today's show, I'm joined by Dr. Lene St. John, a sex educator and intimacy coach, to talk about her new book, Read Me, the Parental Primer on the Talk, to help all you parents out there have the right terminology and knowledge to talk to your kids about sex, intimacy, and relationships. Hey, especially in a time like this where the whole family may be staying home more, it's a good time to start some of these conversations. So topics include, what are the 5 building blocks of healthy sexuality and how do you properly talk about them? You've got kids of all different ages, so what info is age appropriate and how do I get them to understand? Maybe you want to be open with your kids, but you're worried about what if it gets back to other parents? Ways to deal with that, and tools and knowledge to be the best parent you can be in regards to sex and relationships. All this and more. Thanks for listening.
Look into his eyes. They're the eyes of a man obsessed by sex. Eyes that mock our sacred institutions. Bedroom eyes, they call them in a bygone day.
Hey, Emily. You got a boyfriend?
Because my man E here, he just got his heart broken. He thinks you're kind of cute.
A girl's got to have her standards. Oh, my.
The women know about shrinkage.
Isn't it common knowledge?
What do you mean, like laundry? It shrinks?
Can we not talk about sex so much?
Are you kidding me?
Oh, my God. I feel so good.
Being bad feels pretty good.
But you know, Emily's not the kind of girl you just play with.
You're listening to Sex with Emily. We're talking about sex, relationships, and everything in between. For more information, check out sexwithemily.com. We are Sex with Emily on all social media across the board, and that's an important thing to note now, because during this pandemic, you guys, I know it's a really tough time, everything happening in the world right now, and I am here for you. We're going to be doing our same 3 podcasts a week, as well as upping our live content on all platforms, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. It's Sex with Emily. I want to be answering your questions about what to do, you know, crisis and confinement. How do we deal with connection and intimacy and communication? We have time now to deal with it, maybe more than ever, and we really need to. So I'm here for you. The doctor is in. I got you. And so just stay in touch. All right, intentions with Emily. Each show, let's set an intention, and I'm doing it. I encourage you to do the same. So maybe it's like, I really want my kids to grow up without shame and proper knowledge around their bodies and pleasure. Or maybe it's like, God, my kids are home now all the time. They're asking a lot of questions. How do I answer them? Well, my intention is to give you all a great guide to raising sex-positive, informed, shame-free kids and teens, especially at a time where we all want to be healthy and happy and mentally and physically. All right, enjoy the show. I'm so excited to welcome my guest, Dr. Lene St. John. She's a board-certified sexologist. She's a dear friend. We actually went to grad school together. We started over 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. We're just reminiscing. And she's based in the Bay Area right now, intimacy, relationship coach. And since I've known you, you, Lene St. John, have been so passionate about educating children around sex. Mm-hmm. And when we first, so you have been working on this book, which is, I'm so excited it came out, because mm-hmm. this is, I believe, going to be like the Bible for parents. Mm-hmm. It's called Read Me, a parental primer for the talk. And it is a good humored guide for parents preparing for the inevitable talk with their children about sex and sexuality. And you also started the Mama Sutra, mm-hmm. which is your website, your yep. Instagram, all the things. Yep. Which, were you into Kama Sutra then? Is that what it was? Or you just liked it for sex? Well, it's so funny.
It was kind of a play on words, because the kids and I were trying to find some like Bay Area Derby Girl, roller derby style, like funny names for ourselves. And Mama Sutra was just sort of
it's
a play
such
on
a good
Kama
one.
Sutra.
But. I love it. So that's where you started. And you have 2 teenage daughters. Mm-hmm. Your book just came out last year, but it was nominated yeah. the Book Life Prize for the Indie Armor Publishers Weekly. Congratulations on that. Thank you. Can find everything we're talking about in our show notes at sexwithemily.com. And so, Lene, I just want to say thank you for coming to the show, for flying in today to do this, because I think we are at a point right now where, you know, I feel like I have my like finger on the pulse of what people are needing right now, mm-hmm. because I do the Daily Show on yeah. SiriusXM, and people are just, parents are calling in, and it's not just the people calling in, it's my friends with kids who are teenagers yeah. now, yeah. and they all want to know, like, how do I talk to my kids about sex? And yeah. I'm so, when your book came out, I was like, thank God, now I can just say, get Lene's book. But I would tell me, like, I mean, you're doing, there's so much, there's not a lot of resources for parents, so then I find myself on, like, 10-minute calls with people, 20 minutes with friends. Uh-huh. Like, uh-huh. how did you figure out that you were going to, like, write this book? Like, what happened? I've just, ever since I've known you, it's been a journey. I got early manuscripts.
Yeah. So yeah. Yeah. You got the early manuscripts. Yeah. So when we were at school together, it was that first, one of that first lectures in our first semester. A woman came in and talked to us about sexuality and parenting. And it was like, I had this light bulb moment of, yeah, this is actually something that I want to help parents learn how to do. And it's not so much about, my work isn't about talking to kids, it's about helping parents talk to their kids, because parents are the best resource. You know, it's when you typically ask college kids, for example, where do they wish they learned about sex? It always surprised me, the college class I used to teach, the kids would say, I wish my parents would talk to me. I wish my parents would have said something, or they wish they would have been honest, right? So it was that just sort of
the parents, because what I'm finding is the parents don't even know what to, because no one talked to the parents about it, which is yeah. literally us. We're yeah. the parents now.
Yeah, now we're the parents.
My parents didn't talk to me. My friends who are my age are, you know, 40s, 50s, 30s, 40s, 50s. Yeah. They literally don't, they're not comfortable with the subject.
Yeah.
So you have had to unpack so much now, figuring out, well, how, because how do they teach the kids if they didn't do their work themselves?
Yeah. Well, and that's really what this book is about. It's, there are a lot of things to do to unpack. There's a lot of unlearning. There's a lot of crazy messages that aren't healthy, aren't helpful, that we got. And so, like, how do we not pass that on to our kids? And so the book I wrote has this framework that I call the 5 building blocks to a healthy sexuality. And they don't have anything to do with penises or vaginas, who does what goes where. It's just all about helping people have healthy adult sexuality. And so those, the building blocks are communication, consent, respect, pleasure, and fantasy. And so if you can take out needing to talk about who does what, or, you know, what kind of acts you're going to do, and start focusing on the things that are really the things that kind of get you to sex eventually, right? So,
So communication. So let's just say, because I love that, because you also started the book saying, okay, I get it. You don't want to be the first parent that talks about it.
Yeah.
You don't want to be like, because then every parent is so afraid. Well, if I tell my kid, then they're going to go to this playground and then I'm the bad mom.
Yeah.
So getting through all that guilt and shame.
The judgment
itself,
from other parents.
Yeah. There's so much mom shame. I don't want to be the one who was talking about blowjobs or something. Uh-huh. That the kid. So what is the communication? Like, how does that look? So if I'm a parent, is it more like I have to talk to get comfortable myself?
Well, yeah, that's a big piece of it. So I think one of the examples I give in the book is even when the kids are infants, right? Like, how do you begin to get comfortable talking about the parts of the body? And you can do that when you're cleaning them up, changing diapers, right? You can say, I'm going to wipe the urine from your labia, you know, and just practicing saying the words, because, you know, it's no different than a nose or, you know, an elbow. It's just a word that, for whatever reason, has this guilt or this.
Yeah. They might say nonsense. Vagina, but barely, right?
Yeah.
Are they? So, yeah, labia, getting specific.
You could say, labia, you could say vulva, you know, you could name the parts, right? I mean, there are plenty of adult women who don't really even know the parts.
All day, every day.
All day, every day.
They don't. Okay.
So
let's start with that. So you have a kid, a baby, mm-hmm. and, you know, that's a thing. We often don't use the real body parts. So it starts there, just saying, like, vulva, penis. So with a boy, if you have a boy, so you'd say, like, I'm going to wipe it off of your shaft. Like, what do you, like, really, like, not just penis. Yeah, I mean, that's so helpful. Penis, I get.
Poop is going to get on their scrotum, right? Like, if they're in the diaper, everything's solid. Poop's going to be everywhere if you have a little baby. And so you can just say, I'm going to, you know, cleaning off your penis. I'm cleaning off the scrotum, you know, like naming the parts as you're doing it. And it's like exercising a muscle memory, right? Like, you say these words often enough, you're not going to get anxious or nervous about it. And studies show that if you talk about the right parts and name them the proper names, heaven forbid something really terrible happen, that the child is a, you know, survivor of unwanted sexual contact, they can actually name where they were touched or name the part that was.
You're right. Because right now they never heard the words even said out loud.
Yeah. I mean, so, just being able to say down there, like, what? There's a whole lot down there, you know.
Exactly. Was it your knee? Right. Okay. So that makes so much sense. So then they're babies. And so that's kind of how you start the communication. And then like consent, is that it? Like, a certain age, you're like, okay, but this is your private, you even say private parts? Or do you, like,
well, I used to say private parts when my kids were really little.
Totally.
Like, that was just the general area.
Because that's scary too. You have to be so careful. So what do you say now? Just if someone touches you, like the consent part of it.
Well, so consent, I look at it. I try to look at it in a way that doesn't scare people to start, because that's really, I mean, parents are scared. They don't want their kids to be assaulted. They don't want them to be, you know, put in uncomfortable situations. But parents do put their kids in uncomfortable situations all the time. Right. I mean, I had an aha moment once when my kids were really, really little. You know, when they're little, we like to play the tickle game, right? Like, they're little, tiny, little bodies. Mm-hmm. And we just tickle them. But I was doing this once with my daughter, and I sort of had this like flashback moment of myself being the one on the ground, face up, you know, somebody much bigger than me towering over me and, you know, feeling helpless. And I had this moment of like, gosh, you know, and I paused and I stopped myself and I said, you know, honey, if we're ever doing this and you want me to stop, you just tell me to stop and I'll stop. And so I was like, okay, well, let's try this, you know, kind of role play this. And so I went to tickling her. I tickle, tickle, tickle. And she's like, oh, you could see her anxiety, or not the anxiety, but like that excitement, right. Like, I'm going to pee if we keep doing that.
Right.
And so she said, stop. And I literally just froze. No expression, no change of expression on my face. There was no, oh, you know, pouting that we're not going to continue this or anything. Just froze. And I watched her eyes look at my entire face and like track that there was no negative response, no microaggression, no nothing. And she looked at me and then she got this smiley little face and she's like, go. Oh. And so we started up again. And so it was like she then got to practice using her voice. She got to see that she could, you know, she had some say about what was going to happen. And I mean, it's had an impact on her.
It's such a moment. Yeah, because kids are looking at your facial expressions. Is there feedback? Is there, you know, we interpret things as anger, especially if you grew up in a home where emotions, things aren't comfortable. You have no say. God, that's such a, that's so, I did too. That's so wise. That's really such a smart thing. And then you started there. I mean, I met them when they were little. I was reminiscing that they were probably 6 or 7, if they're 16 and 17 now, that we were, I was in Marin County and I was hiking and I ran into on the trail and my nieces, who were about the same age at that time, were visiting from Michigan. And I was like, because even think about this, it was like 11, 10 years ago when it was, now sex is maybe there's more people doing what we're doing and it's, but then you were just like, I'm the Mama Sutra. And yes, these are my girls. And I talked to them about their vaginas and masturbation. And I think that it was like my brother maybe or my sister-in-law, their heads were like, these are my girls. You can't talk about sex. And they always say, how's your Mama Sutra friend? But I love that you've done that because why does, you are really been the one like taking the shame out of it. Like, why should we set our kids up for failure? Let's set them up for success in that way.
Yeah.
And I mean, just so brave.
And it's also, it's important to do this stuff when it's low stakes, right? Like when they're young and they, you know, they kind of develop into this healthy sexuality, right? Yeah. Like it's super important.
Okay, so then that's where it starts with that. And then how does it move through? Because your kids are really, I mean, what I love about the book is that you are including like, it's casual, like you have your blogs in here because you have been living the work. Like now your girls have grown up with this. So there's just so much more. I mean, I even love the first part where you're talking about when they find your vibrator, when they're little and you're brushing your teeth.
That was actually the very first moment of being vulnerable with them and everything. And so the story with this is, my oldest, I was in the bathroom brushing my teeth and I left a little tiny bullet vibrator, you know, the kind that looks like a lipstick. I left it on the counter and I could hear her like bouncing, skipping into the room. I was like, oh, great. I put it in the drawer and I close the drawer, continue brushing my teeth. And she comes in to get a hairbrush. And of course she opens the drawer that I just put it in. And so
kids
like brushing my teeth, but my eyes are like as big as saucers. And she's like, Mom, what's this? And I said, it's a vibrator, put it away. And she's like, no, what does it do? And she's playing with it and fussing with it. And it didn't have an on-off. It was just like a twist. And she twisted it on. And I was like, it's for your private parts. And she's like.
On her face, on her eyes.
All across her, eyebrows, forehead, and down her nose. And you know, we were talking about it. She said, it tickles. I said, well, imagine what it feels like on your private parts. She turned it off, put it in the drawer, closed the drawer, and just bounced out of the room. And I was like,
thank God it dodged a bullet or like what? And you're just like,
yeah, it was, you know, I think in that moment she realized that I was going to be honest with her. Like, I'm going to tell her the truth.
How old was she at that point? Like 7?
I want to say she was 6 or 7.
Okay.
Yeah. It was like, it was right when we went back to studies, right back to school.
Okay.
Yeah. So she would have been 7. Mm-hmm. And so yeah, it was just this moment and it was a nothing moment for her. It was really a nothing moment. Like she did not, I don't even know if she remembers it actually.
Right, probably not, but.
But for me, it was like, you know, I scared.
Right.
Senseless practically.
And then
like, oh my God, I was honest. And the funny thing is when I tell women, they're like, oh, that's interesting. Yeah, okay. I don't think I would have had a hard time, blah, blah, blah. But usually men get like, really like, oh my God, you talked to your daughter about that?
Right. How do you get right? Of course we do. Who else is going to? If not me, I always say it's a you or YouTube.
Yeah,
you or you porn. Ooh. For the parents. You can take that, but it's true. Like it's like you have to do it, but parents are not well equipped. That's why this book is so so great.
Thank
because
you.
it's not even like people always want to know. Well, from age 6 to 10, tell them this. And I've even been like, well, maybe you should, 10 to 14, but every kid's different.
Every kid's different.
They and find your vibrator or something happens earlier than you talk about. You don't lie.
Yeah. So the book
about your approach.
Yeah. It is not an ages and stages thing because it's exactly what you said. There's going to be something that happens and brings the topic up and you're going to have to deal with it right there. And, you know, so it's less ages and stages. And I think of it more like, it's like zooming out, like a 30,000 foot view. Like, okay, what's the goal here? The goal is to have a healthy sexuality, right? We want people to develop and be happy and healthy and satisfied and, you know.
But let's talk about the difference between sex and sexuality. Talking to your kids about that.
Yeah.
Or yourself about that.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much as it relates to sexuality, right? I mean, I have to laugh about this, and I don't know if it was the same for you. Like, I entered sex school thinking I knew everything, right? Like, oh yeah, I've got this. I know what this is.
I didn't really. No, I never think I know it. Because I'm always like beginner's mind. I'm like, oh, there's so much more to learn. Yeah,
that's amazing. I didn't. Okay. I was like, okay, sex. Like, I know this, but like stupid. I mean, it was a very immature way of thinking in my mind, because there was so much more, right? Like, and I laugh because I am constantly learning as well. So I've gone back to beginner mind, or I've developed.
I'm always learning. I feel like there's so much more to unpack, and the more that we grow and learn, then there's more layers. And I realize that that's life. I've always thought that once I get through this phase, that everything's going to be easier, whatever. And no, there's always more to unpack. And sex is the same thing. It's like health. Exactly. It's literally a topic like health,
yeah,
sex, cooking.
Yeah.
You know, working, you know, whatever. It's like sex. So yeah. I am always like, okay, I mean, I, and also you don't remember everything and it hits you at different times. So I'm always getting re-inspired.
Yeah.
But your girl. So now I love that they're like now 16, 17, but through mm-hmm. this journey, like, let me give you some example of things that come in, like a parent or a friend be like, okay, so I just found out that my son is masturbating and watching porn. What do I do? And maybe their son is 13.
Okay. So first of all, the big question is, how much have you talked to your kid about sex?
Nothing, never, not at all. My dad didn't talk to me about sex, so I'm not talking to him.
Yeah,
you know, or on the mom, like, no, yeah. Nothing.
Yeah, so it's a question of, where do you want your kids to learn about sex? And you said it's either you or you YouTube. Porn
or YouTube. You or YouTube. You too. Yeah,
it is honestly that. And so we can't get mad at our kids if they problem solve, right? And the problem they're trying to solve is. Learning about sex. And if no one's telling them, they're going to Google the best resources they have. And we kind of can't get mad at them for doing what we would expect them to do if they were to solve a problem. So the thing that's important also to tell your kids, if you're not going to talk about sex, at the very least, you have to tell them that everything else that they do see out there is someone else's fantasy. And it's not necessarily real. It's not necessarily how
things
work. So
what they're seeing on the internet, porn, all that is not real.
It's not.
No, I say that too. I'm like, it's there for your entertainment.
Yeah.
One person decided this was hot. Other people agreed that might not be your fantasy. But then that's all they see with sex. And then the kids are thinking that's actually how it goes down.
Yeah.
So you tell them it's just not real.
Yeah. I mean, it also depends on where they're going. Like if they go to a good site, like Cindy Gallup, I almost forgot her name.
Oh,
Cindy
Gallup's
Make Love Not Porn.
Yeah, let's talk about, okay, so that's a good resource.
I don't know if they can access that that's got a paywall though, I think.
I don't know, that's the problem. This is why your book is so good. Read, I'm talking to Dr. Lene St. John. Read Me, A Parental Primer for the Talk. It's so multi-layered. So the parents have never even talked about it. So they just kind of say, it's okay, keep it in your, like, it's not real. And here's some, do you think that they should give them like wipes or lubes or like clean up?
Well, I mean, the things you should talk about are it's a hygiene issue, right? Like make sure that, you know, get them some good lube, or give them some, like, because they could chafe if they're using
lotion, they use shampoo. Something.
Yeah.
They're sticking their penises in the shampoo bar, right?
Yeah. Depends on what they're using, right? Like sometimes it's not always the greatest, but if you know they're masturbating, you can give them
natural,
some of the good
human,
stuff.
Right?
Yeah. Find stuff that's body safe and not necessarily got all kinds of stuff that's not so great in it. You know, it feels weird to say that out loud, but yeah, I mean, it's sexual health, mm-hmm. right? When I was teaching the college students at CCSF, we used to talk about one of the assignments I gave them as a choice was to do a genital self-exam. And you know, I had one student, it was a student in the working adult degree program. So she was advanced years and she was going back to get her degree finally. And she had adult kids. And she told me that she had this genital self-exam assignment that she put it off, did not want to do it. She finally did it. And she was like, you know, learning about her body and learning, you know, to name
the
parts.
How old was she in college? You said like 6. Well,
she was like 60.
Okay. Oh, 60.
Yeah.
Okay.
And she was, you know, doing this for the first time. And she came back and she relayed the story. And she said, you know, it surprised me how I let other people tell me what I look like all these years. And I finally got a chance to take a look. And you know, by the end of the, you know, I lock my bedroom door, I lock my bathroom door.
Right.
No kids are going to come in. And I, you know, finally sat down and do this genital self-exam. And she's like, by the end of it, I had my underwear. And I was like, whipping it up above my head. Like, and, you know, somebody who is 60, this is important information about your body, regardless of how old you are. And, you know, if you teach your kids to know what they, you know, how they feel, what it looks like, it's not a sexual thing to take care of your sexual health.
Let's talk about how you did this with your girls, because I think that is so, it's like, how do you teach them about pleasure and about consent and about their bodies and orgasm? Because my next thing was like, people often say, should I get my daughter a vibrator? You know, my daughter's 16, should I get her a vibrator? But they've never talked about sex before.
Yeah. So what, how I mean, that's an awkward
and conversation. And you've been unpacking it, right. And you've been unpacking this with your kids since they were young. So I can't wait to hear how you have handled this.
Like, I'm wondering how much.
What age or what did you?
So, I mean, I think it's been different for me because I talk about this stuff with them and also because I get toys sent to me, right? So I've had, you know, stacks of toys. And eventually my daughter asked me about one. And so when she was curious, I allowed it. I mean,
you said this is a toy that mommy uses to please myself.
I didn't even need to say that because by that point, you know, it was only in the last couple of years. So we'd already had a huge foundation.
So talking about that foundation, did you have them, like, did you sit with them while they did an exam of their genitals? Did you that?
Nope.
But they just.
I've explained things and I've let them do what they're going to do. Cause it's almost like you don't need to encourage it. You just need to acknowledge it.
So when did you how did you talk to them about masturbation and pleasure? And I'm sure for you, it's like I always say, it's like explaining water to a fish because it's like air. Like you're like, how did I not? Like it was everything. It was like, did you brush your teeth? Did you do the laundry? Have you, like, here's how you feel. I don't know. It probably was, but in a way that people can understand, how do they address masturbation? If they're just, because everyone's starting somewhere else with their kids too.
So I think this is where also, I and I'm speaking from my experience, just kids touching themselves is not masturbation, but it's not masturbation to orgasm, right? Like that's, I think adults get in their heads that that's what they're intending to do when they're like little toddlers, right? Like, no, they're just.
They're like literally touching.
Because it feels good, right? It feels amazing to touch your parts, right? Whatever part you're going to touch. And so it was this, you know, it was a conversation that I just told them, you know, just make sure your hands are clean.
Yep.
You know, don't do it in public.
Right. Don't anyone else do it. Yeah. Like the consent part too. Don't allow anyone else to, because it's part of the model too. And you also talk about the plicit model.
Yeah.
And then the five pillars that people should talk about. Is that what the, but consent. Don't let anyone else touch you.
Yeah. I mean, mostly I made it about like autonomy of your own body, right? Like this is your body. You have access to it. Nobody really should tell you what you should or shouldn't do with your body. And so, yeah, I mean, it was.
But have they asked you questions about, or even just any parent? Like, I just say, it's important to know your body, what feels good. Because, you know, as you know, that most of sex is about giving it away and giving it up and male pleasure. And I find that even with my friends, young kids, my nieces, they still believe that it's about giving sex and not their own pleasure. So it's really teaching them pleasure.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you know if they've had, they might not want you to talk about this, but.
Yeah, this is where, I mean, I know that in our conversations, I think I've made it more about me and my experiences and so that they could learn from that.
Okay.
It wasn't so much, I mean, really the only kind of curveball question my daughter threw to me when she was young was, how do you have sex and not get pregnant? And I was like, so that's a conversation about pleasure, right? Like, because why else would you
have sex? So what would you say to that? Yeah. You'd say, well,
the first time around I talked about, what did I talk about? I think I just talked about masturbation, but then I was like, well, there are other things you can do that, you know, are going to allow you to have pleasure, but not get pregnant. And so, it was.
And then you explained it? Like,
I said mutual masturbation. I think that was the one example I gave her, but it was just like this moment of like, oh my God, she actually realizes that there's something more than just babies.
Yeah.
And
because that's all they're told. She was young. The birds and the bees. Right. It's one talk. The stork's right. coming. We're going to get pregnant. Don't do that.
Yeah.
It's fear.
Yeah. 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 Fear, shame, embarrassment.
We're going to take a quick break and we come back even more with Dr. Lene St. John. There's nothing quite like sinking your teeth into a good sandwich. But listen, carb guilt is real. I'm someone who's very invested in my health, and I like to get my carbs from oats and beans and fruits and not bread. But I love bread. So here's my hack. Thanks to Hero Bread, you can enjoy your favorite bready delights without the carb consequences. Hero Bread has turned those carby, empty-calorie bread products into fluffy, delicious breads that boast 0 to 1 net carbs per serving, 0 grams of sugar, and are packed with loads of fiber and protein. The first time I tried their white bread, I was skeptical. Could it really taste good with such impressive nutritional stats? Well, I'm pleasantly surprised to say it absolutely does. The texture is just phenomenal. It's like this soft, airy, and it just toasts up like a dream. I've whipped up everything from grilled cheese to PB&J and even made enchiladas, wraps, and tacos with their tortillas. Each time, Hero Bread has been a game changer. And here's the kicker. Despite its light texture and great taste, Hero Bread fits perfectly into my health goals. It's been adding more fiber to my diet while keeping the sugar at bay. Whether I'm packing a picnic lunch, planning a road trip snack, which I often do, or prepping French toast for breakfast, Hero Bread is my go-to. So whether you're craving a classic sandwich, a burger, or a hearty bun, or even indulging in a low net carb croissant, Hero Bread is something for everyone. And I highly recommend checking their monthly small batch drops out so you can try goodies like the 1 gram net carb Hero Cheddar Biscuit and so much more. You won't believe what they have. So you ready to kick carb guilt to the curb? Head over to hero.co and snag 10% off your order with the code Emily. That's Emily at hero.co. I like that you talk about in your book too about renaming virginity, losing your virginity as a sexual debut.
Yeah.
So how does that make different? You know, that it's such a great way. It's branding.
Yeah.
Well, it's so much better.
It's totally branding. I mean, I'm preaching to the choir on this whole like virginity, like social construct, total bullshit. Think about virginity tests. Like, what do they do to test virginity, right? Like, and who's the person doing the test, right? Like, just annoying.
You can't even tell anyway. It's inaccurate, but never do it anyway. It's terrible, right?
So you've got this very patriarchal, very heterocentric model that tells you that women have to like keep this thing, like, you know,
pristine, safe for the one.
Yeah. So in taking the concept of virginity and moving it into an ideal of like a sexual debut, you can have multiple debuts, right?
I like every time I have sex, I'm having a debut,
right? Like, yeah. It could be so your first fun. Kiss. It could be your first orgasm. It could be your first threesome, right? Like there's a lot of potential sexual debuts, and they don't have anything to do necessarily with, you know, the penis going into a vagina, right? Like it's a very specific definition. And so kids who are survivors of unwanted sexual contact may not have been able to, right? Like to say when they lost their concept of virginity, it sort of disempowers them. It also is very limiting for kids who are not oriented to heterosexual interactions, right? And so it's super limiting. And so I think if you look at it in terms of like the sexual debut, it can be a much more beautiful, you know, you can celebrate lots of things.
Right, exactly. So the building blocks, going back to that, so we talk about like communication, consent, respect. So it's about like, and also teaching young men and women about respecting each other and changing like the game. And then, how about like teaching boys about respect of women?
It's respect just in general, right? Because I think we have, I don't like to call it rape culture, it is.
Yes.
But I call it more a culture of disrespect. And so, you know, for boys, it's tough because they're very limited. The culture limits them to what, like 3 or 4 emotions that they're allowed to have. They can be excited or passionate about their team, their sports. They can express a desire to want to have sex. They can be angry. What else do they got? Like they're
anger, sad, joy. They can have joy, anger. We were just talking about fear, sadness. And then I think what one is like sexual attraction. Was it sexual attraction, Jane, we were talking about yesterday? And you wrote sexual attraction.
Yeah.
And I was reading a book that said that there's five. And it said we never talk about sexual attraction because sexual, I was just saying sexual energy, sexual attraction in the moment.
Yeah.
That is a big one that we just lob off. Yep. What if I'm aroused? Where do I put that? Is that joy?
Yeah.
Maybe. You know, so.
Yeah. 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 I mean, so boys are hugely limited. I mean, we don't do them any favors when we limit their expression. And so I think respect, I mean, they learn to respect others by the models that they have too. And so if the models they have are limited to, you know, five choices, you know, I don't think it's not fair to them. So.
Okay. Yeah. Let's talk about then you said about the rape, like you talk about it as being a spectrum, that it's not binary. So how do we like make those distinctions?
Which piece?
About rape. Being on a spectrum, like it's why, like what we know, like if you're having like a rape fantasy or it's sexual assault, it's like the new dialogue around, I know, right? The dialogue around like sexual assault and rape and like what is rape, you know, like just not using it as like a, you know.
Yeah. I mean, when we talk about fantasy, for example, I mean, it's a fact that women fantasize about rape. But when you look at it,
or for sex, yeah.
Yeah. But if you look at it in terms of how it will actually be acted out, like they don't often want it to be somebody they don't know under, you know, I mean, it's, so
under
there's
duress,
like,
right.
No. Weapons or whatever the case may be. That can be horribly traumatic. But so at least in terms of fantasy, you have, where do I want to go with this?
Yeah. Just more like fantasy about, but I guess it's more about explaining that and also not shaming people if they have a fantasy around that. And then, but that's what happens. Society gets perpetuated. That's what she wanted it. She asked for it.
Yeah.
But I think the thing about the fantasy is that like we, I think for women, and it's so hard now with the gender, but you know, saying like we want to be taken and cherished and loved and be accepted. So that feels really good, or it's exciting, keeping it interesting, but we don't want to be raped.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing too is fantasies don't always have to be acted out, right? Like you can have a fantasy. The one that always pops into my head is, I think it's called formicophilia. That's the one when you have ants or you have bugs crawling all over you and nibbling on your genitals.
Okay.
Like you could never realistically act that out because you can't direct bugs for one.
Right, exactly.
In Hollywood, like, right. I don't know anybody that can direct bugs.
No.
But if you let loose a swarm, I don't even know, a bunch of cockroaches, like, you just have an infestation. You wouldn't have the fantasy of like having them nibble. Like, it's just weird.
Yeah.
So fantasy isn't always something that can be acted out in reality.
Fantasy was something too, talking about that I learned. I guess I never thought that if we had something wrong, but I've had to work on it. But it's such a, that was an interesting thing to learn that in school too. And over the years, how important fantasy is, because you always feel like it's shameful or it's wrong or, but you're, not every fantasy we want to act out, but how it's just plays such an important part about being sexually healthy. And like all of this, what I like in your book is that you are just giving people permission to like, it's okay that you don't know as parents. It's okay that you didn't learn, but let's change the game now. And like, let's teach you that it's acceptable, because even if you had a fantasy, you crave something, we just automatically go to that's wrong. We repress it. We shame it. We shame ourselves.
We shame our partner for having a fantasy. Like the big one is the threesome, right? Like shame
you
can ask
that every day. People always ask me, how do I have a threesome or how do I? Yeah.
So I came up with a unique way.
Tell me. Tell me all your things. I want to know everything. We haven't talked in a while.
So I came up with an interesting way, and it was sort of like I landed on it through experience as well. But you don't necessarily have to have a second part or a third person in the room.
Right.
You could use a suction cup dildo.
Oh.
Right? Like,
So where is it suctioning to? The wall? Does it stay anywhere?
The fridge.
threesome in the kitchen in case you get hungry.
Right? Like it could be the fridge. It could be the washing machine. Like any
secure surface. How do we not have a threesome? I want a dildo that sucks. Okay. So you're right. That's a good one. So it's like.
So you don't necessarily have to bring in a third, because I mean, there's all kinds of.
Or talking about it, role playing.
Yeah. Right. I mean, aside from the parenting piece, talking about the adult sexuality piece, you know, the whole concept of bringing in a third can be really, really, it can be messy, right?
Like, you said that you've done this with your partner. Is it common? Is it a practice that you guys do?
Not this current partner.
But okay. In the past. Yeah.
In the past. This whole fantasy, right? The whole fantasy of having a threesome, like people talk about it all the time. You probably get the question asked like daily. 5 times a day. Yeah. It's not always what it's cracked up to be. Like, I mean, there's a lot of communication that should happen. At least in my experience, I've had some really messy experiences where, you know, the person that I was interested in, we brought somebody else in they then started communicating, like it felt like disrespect to me.
Oh, right? It does. That happens all the time because we didn't set the boundaries ahead of time.
Exactly.
And so then we learn. Yeah, you learn. You guys, we're always still learning. I'm still learning.
That was a long time ago, and that was really awkward.
How do you think it's changed in the last 10 years now that you've been doing this? Like, what do you feel? Like, how has the landscape changed for better or for worse?
So, I think things generally have gotten better. There are a lot more people out here doing this, talking about sex. I think, though, this particular niche, this particular piece of the parenting piece, is like when I tell people that I wrote this book, I get a lot of that's so important. But then nobody wants it. Like, it's like,
I'm so glad you're doing it.
Yes. I'm glad
you're doing it. My friend's kids call me. Yes.
Yes. And so it's like, oh, it's so important. But for other people. Like, I don't want to deal with this.
How do we break through them? What have you seen, Lene? How do you get parents to pay attention? Because this is urgent. It's not, I think it is. You can't, literally, we teach our kids, and I'll let you answer that. Sorry, I answered that. You're like, here, you make them take driver's ed, and you take them out driving, and then you finally maybe give them the keys to the car, they get their license. Yeah. But they had training, and then they went off. You're like, well, I know they're out driving my car now, but they are ready. But yeah. Sex, we're like, don't do it. It's going to be bad. Wait, don't get hurt. Don't get an STD. And then, you know, they've sex, then you're like, bye, you never talk about it again. Yeah. And then yes. You just send them off into the world to figure out how to drive and make their own path. And it's not, we are doing this probably because we didn't know.
It's absolutely why I'm doing it.
Right? I didn't know anything. Yeah.
So actually the example you gave was perfect because we do this driver's ed thing, right? We have them take courses, we have them get like the basics, and then eventually they're going to get the keys to the car. I mean, if you look at movies as an example, and I have this in my head because we're here in Hollywood. You don't learn how to drive from Fast and the Furious movies, right? Like you just don't. You don't necessarily learn how to cook from, you know, I mean, you're watching the cooking shows, but it's not like actually getting in there and doing it. And the same thing, like, you know, swimming lessons, right? Like we don't just really throw people in the pool because that's dangerous. Right? But that's essentially what we're doing with sex. Like we're just throwing people into the pool and saying, okay, swim, you know,
so if
just
try to survive. Exactly. So what do we do if we are so like, and I guess they'd have to, like they have to read the book or they have to just know that it's okay. Well, I always say it's like, it's okay to tell your kids that like, this is uncomfortable for me.
Absolutely.
I don't have all the answers. Absolutely. I never learned it. So this is awkward. My mom didn't do it to me, but I really want to have a healthy conversation with you. Yeah. But what I feel like, and then parents are like, phew, I did that. And then they don't go back. You got to keep circling back because also- I remember what my mom said to me was, if you have any questions about sex, ask me. And I didn't know what the questions were.
Yeah.
I didn't know. I started having sex. It wasn't until much later that I realized like I still didn't know anything. I wasn't having orgasms through penetration. So I thought I was broken.
Yeah.
I never masturbated. Yeah. Never even occurred to me to touch myself. Yeah. And then I was like in my 20s. And I was like, ask my friends in college. And my listeners have heard this story. But I'm just like, oh, why? They're like, I'm like, what is the deal with sex? Why doesn't it feel great? And he's pounding away at me. I can't wait for it to be over. And this is my boyfriend of 2 years. I was like 21.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, what about masturbation? And even it took me years to even after that, till I finally had an orgasm. But it's just like, I didn't know the question. So what if your kids are like, mom, it's fine. I know, whatever. Like, how do you keep bringing it up and making it current and making it so they, you said also you share your own stories, but what else do we do? How do we make it more comfortable and get practice talking to our kids?
Yeah, I mean, the book has a bunch of different examples of kind of how I've done that. But I think where we can step away from the fear of needing to talk about, you know, the acts and everything and talk about pleasure, for example. Pleasure is not just sexual pleasure. And I think that's something that adults in America particularly have a tough time with, because we do think pleasure, sex, you know, but reading a good book, right? Like finding things that are pleasurable to you so that you can go to those things when you, when you're anxious or when you're, you know, or when you break up, right? Like, you know, the things that are pleasurable to you that you can go back to get back to who you are. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's not always about sex. So, yeah, it's the conversations around sexuality for parents. I think very often we get bogged down in the sex, and there's just so much more to talk about that helps people with the sex piece. Let's see, I have a different way to approach this. I think, you know, when we have difficulty talking to our kids, it's probably because we also have difficulty talking to our partners. And so if we can figure out ways to get comfortable talking to our partners,
practice.
There. Yeah. It's literally mm-hmm. just like it is with the wiping the diapers or like cleaning after diapers. Like, it's just practice.
So let's talk about how you talk to your, if you've never talked to your partner. Because I title this all day and you're another sex educator. What do you say to people? I've never, okay, fine. We have a 16-year-old daughter, but my husband and I have been together for 10 years and we've never talked about it.
Well, the one that just popped in my head, actually, as you were saying that, though, was the question about, like, my wife doesn't want to have sex, but can I just masturbate next to her, right? Or the roles could be shifted. It's the husband doesn't want to have sex.
Yeah.
But I want to masturbate. Is it okay to do it in the bed? And so it's like, well, I guess it's a question of, you know, what are you both comfortable with, right? Like, it's not fair to say, I'm not going to have sex with you. I don't want to have sex. I mean, if it's different, if it's a manipulative thing, mm-hmm. right? Like, if you're like, oh, I don't want to have sex with you, but it's like you're lording it over your partner. That's messed up and you should probably go to therapy, couples therapy for that. But like, if you just aren't feeling it, but your partner wants to get some sexual pleasure, like, negotiate it, like, talk about it. Like, can you do it quietly while I sleep? Or, you know, or maybe you do it before I climb into bed, because, you know, sometimes people like to lay down when they masturbate. Right. And if it's, you know, if it's not okay with their partner, let's explore that. Why is it not okay? Is it a shame thing?
It's
always
shame around masturbation, or it means that it's a replacement or something.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, honestly, I used to think that when I was.
So did I. Yeah. I thought all the things. That's just funny. You forget when you didn't think it. But I remember one of the things I learned too that was so surprising to me was that women wanted sex just as much as men. And I was like in my mid-30s when I started this. I was like, I thought that was true. And then all of a sudden I started like the stats and like, oh, no, women want, like, you know, because we're told women are frigid and men want sex all the time. There's all these myths that I was just like, oh, that's not true. That's not true.
Hand those out.
Right? And we have such a. I'm trying to think of what else we learned. It's so hard to remember because it's been so long. But again, but then like we learned those basics, but then you realize why it's such important. The work that you're doing is that because you realize that yes, it's changed, but every day there's somebody who doesn't know this, who still believes that they're broken because they can't orgasm during intercourse, or because they don't, you know, because they have fantasies, or they don't want sex as often as their partner. There's just all the things that we just go right to, well, I'm broken, I'm wrong, because there's not a model out there of what's right.
So which what you were saying just reminded me, there was a piece I wanted to add on to that genital self-exam. I mean, think about how often you go to the doctor, right? Specifically the OBGYN, right? You go maybe once a year and you're expecting your doctor to remember what you look like, right? There's been a year that's passed. How many other vaginas, you know, vulvas have they seen?
Right, exactly.
And like, so for you to be able to be empowered to know what your body looks like, so that you can notice any changes happen. You can go in promptly if you notice a change, right? Like men doing a scrotum check, they notice a little P-shaped bump. If you wait months for that, that bump is make it bigger, right? And you could have caught it when it was.
Because they're not taking pictures when you go into the gynecologist or the urologist. Okay, right. So for women, how do you teach them to do an exam? Like, I want to take the word, like, how do you teach them to take a look? Like, you know?
So, I mean, I actually
in school, right? I remember this. Yep. That was the first time I did it.
Yeah, that was.
Do you remember we had to make pictures of our vaginas. Like they had like
an art sculpture.
Art sculpture. They had like all the supplies out. They had like googly eyes and like the pipe cleaners and all the sparkles and like make your vulva day.
We did. Somebody actually, I remember somebody carved a bar of soap.
Yeah.
And like, I was like, that's amazing.
Yeah. I was like, oh God, I just slapped this together.
I don't remember who did it. They used makeup. They specifically used the medium of makeup to shade and like the colors. And
I remember that.
I was like, that was pretty creative.
Right, exactly. But we had to look, and I wasn't excited for that day to go home and be like, okay.
No.
But that's when you're like, oh.
So yeah, I mean.
I have pictures too that I've taken just to like for my, I think they're in my privates, but just so I can see how I'm looking, how it's going. Like, is it changing?
Have you done Betty Dodson's?
No. Have you?
Yes.
You did her masturbation circle?
Yes. Body Sex. And
was it a course or it was like a weekend?
It was a course. It was a weekend course. It was amazing.
It's in New York, right?
It's basically the same thing that she just covered on
Goop.
On Goop.
Yeah.
I did it in 16, I think. Okay. December of 16. It was amazing.
I've heard that. And I was like, oh, I don't know if I need to do it. But she's in New York, right?
I have chills talking about it. Like goosebumps.
Tell me everything.
It was so good. So
tell me everything what happened.
You get there and Carlin answers the door naked. Like you are not wearing clothes the entire weekend. And it's women. And there's this remarkable sisterhood that comes up right away. Like, I kid you not. I get Jill's talking about it again. It feels so normal.
And it's you're all bizarre. Naked the whole time. Are you staying there naked. At her place?
I have whole body chills right now. Like, it is a weird sisterhood. I mean, not weird like a bad thing, but like fascinating that so promptly. I am all goosebumps right now.
I love how much you feel
it is
in
like,
your body, Linnea. You're amazing.
I mean, Carlin and Betty have created the most remarkable space. And, you know, Betty just teaches her rocking method. So like, what is it? It's like 2 days. I don't think you do the masturbation the first day. I think you do that the second day. It's like this group. You're solo. You're not interacting with other people, but it's in the room. And there's this remarkable like rolling orgasm that can happen too, because you have, you know, a bunch of people who are masturbating and you can
hear. Did that happen? Did you have two orgasms?
I did. I don't remember if I had multiple. I think I might've had this one or two, but there were people, there was one person.
My mom just saw it. She's 77. She's like, do you know Betty? I'm like, I do. Cause I've met her before, but I haven't done the course. She's like, it's just like you, but I haven't watched it. But the point is the rolling orgasm is like a different, like is the method of.
Well, no, that's the rocking.
She calls it rocking.
Well, what I meant by that is like, one person will have an orgasm, then it's like a domino effect. Better word. One person will have one, then another person, and it's just this remarkable feeling. And then there's a part where there's a vulva show and tell, and so you're literally it's exactly like they did in Goop, where Betty's sitting near you and you're looking at your parts and she's sort of like helping you name the parts, right? So a genital self-exam is the exact same thing. You just don't have Betty Dodson sitting next to you.
to tell how you many what women to do. Were there?
12. I think about 12 people.
Yeah.
And it was December, so it was super cold in New York. And she had the apartment like up to 90 degrees. It was super comfortable.
Did you guys sleep there or you just come in like no, 10 to 5 in, or something? Yeah.
It was like, might have been longer. Okay. But yeah, it was full days. Yeah.
I want to do it now I want to go. Amazing. See, that's what I haven't done yet. I'm going to Pamela's thing. I'm going, that I've never done.
Yeah.
That is really cool. So you learn from, women, then even after 10 years of doing this, that was still, or maybe then it was six, but it was still a shift for you. Like, we're never done peeling back the layers. Like, you were still like, I've never been with a bunch of women in a room naked like this.
I mean, it sounds so bizarre. But I can't explain how
didn't
natural it was.
Didn't we do that at school, though? I didn't do it. I didn't get naked, though. Didn't we have to do that?
Yeah, I think it was the mirror exercise.
The mirror exercise. Yeah. But I didn't. I remember I didn't do it.
I don't remember if I got totally naked. I think I had underwear on, too.
I think I had underwear on.
Bra and underwear.
But we had to get up and we had to look in the mirror and say what we liked about our body, mm-hmm. what we didn't like. Correct?
I remember the didn't like. I remember
so
the
we
liked.
Liked. What we liked.
For
yeah,
sure liked.
Yeah, it was for liked. Yeah, of
and
course. Nothing negative.
Yeah, because they wanted to stay. Yeah, they wanted to stay on the
course.
Positive.
It wasn't didn't like.
I like that exercise with my kids.
Okay.
I did that.
You talk about that in the book. Tell me about that.
I did that.
Wait, I love that. You talk about that in the book. Yeah. Tell me how that goes down.
So it was when they were little. So it was it was right after that class.
Yeah, you probably came home and said, mommy still has to do homework. Want to do some homework with me?
I did. And so, but I tried to make it like really peppy and like, hey, let's do this thing and like not make it weird, right? Because it's not weird unless you make it weird. And so both girls had things that they really liked about their bodies.
And your daughters are like 6 and 7 at this time.
Yeah, like, yeah, 6 and 7. Yeah. And my oldest, you know, was always like just very self-assured and very confident. And so she named her 3 things right away.
You're like, hey, what do you love about your body? For some young girls, that is so powerful.
I mean, what is it? Mean girls, they look at the things that they don't like. And it is a huge shift to look at your body and talk about the things you like, right? Like, when do we do that?
Never.
We
just think what we don't like. I got to change. I got to lose weight. I got to change this. I got to change that.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, that stuff is lifelong, right? Like I've gone through some changes approaching menopause here that like, you know, it's work that has to be done all the time.
But if you were training your girls to say, you're like, and I think I love the way you describe it, you're like, I like my like knees and my vulva. And then your daughter's like, let me do it. And it's like teaching girls to look in the mirror and be like, this is what I love about myself. It's just, it's training. It's
start when they're young.
Practicing those muscles.
Yeah, start when they're young because they're going to have plenty of influences that tell them all the things that are wrong with them, right? Like I still hear the shit that, you know, like all in my own head all the time. And, you know, my daughters now will like, so they talk about how they like my squish. So like
your body squish?
My body squish. And they love squeezing me. And, you know, I get really self-conscious about it because that's not okay. And, right. You know, and I know they mean it in the most loving, adoring, you know, mom-daughter way. But I still have all kinds of anxiety about it. And it's only been in the last year, actually, that I'm like even turning a corner around like the whole self-acceptance thing. Cause I hear messages that I heard growing up, you know, words that were used for, you know, the type of clothing or just like really not nice things. And so, you know, if I can, and my daughters are sort of really key in helping me unlearn this because they're helping me and they don't understand. They honestly don't understand why I don't love the squish. It perplexes them just like, and so their love is helping me adjust.
That's so beautiful.
So like I taught them and now they're teaching me. It's weird.
It's so true. I see that. Yeah. Well, it sounds like you're doing such a great job. Your daughters are going to take over the world. Really? That's amazing. But they're like, I don't get it. Like,
they don't get it.
Very different than like the mean girls or the, you know, because you were such a conscious parent and you were so conscious and loving to really check yourself and to bring that into the home, right? I mean, to me, you know, no parent's perfect and no one is perfect in their life, but just to be so conscious about, you know, you know, so many moms are like probably with their daughter, I gotta lose weight, or mom looks fat, or, you know, I mean, that's just, we just say that. I say to our friends, I'll say it in front of my daughters, and then your daughter thinks they're fat. My mom used to diet all the time. My mom was always like, oh, I gotta lose 3 pounds. And that comes off, you know, you hear that. Like, you're just, well, that's my mom. That's a woman in my life, the most prominent woman. Maybe it's better to be skinny. It's better to, you know, the stuff is important.
Yeah.
But you don't put weight on any of that.
Yeah. Literally. I mean, not anymore. And actually, I can see my body as more womanly now than I did, you know, because I was always picturing my body to be what my kids, like current, like teenager.
I don't look like a 17-year-old girl.
Look like a seven, like, you know, and it was making me anxious. And the funny thing is, I didn't have a sexy bra and underwear pair, like a sexy set.
Matching set,
Yeah, because I was avoiding my body. Mm.
Yeah. That's so true. We women, we forget. It's even our jobs. Like you didn't have sexy underwear. I have guys coming over now. I took a little while from dating. My housekeeper, my housewife is what I call her. She's taking care of my house. She's like, you need new sheets. Like I didn't even see that. Like, I mean, they were like not matching. And like I spilled a pen in one of them. Like it was ink mark. I'm like, yeah, that's going to make me feel good. We don't see it on our own selves.
Yeah.
So that made you go out and buy underwear because we look amazing. Women, confidence is still the sexiest thing on the planet.
Yeah. And the funny thing is like, it matters what I say about myself, but just putting on a brand new sexy pair of, you know, a set was like, yeah, you know, like, oh,
I deserve this. This is amazing. Look at me.
Yeah.
And I'm sure your partner was like, oh, it's just different. It's new, you know, it's empowering.
Yeah, he loved it. Like that was like, I forgot what word he used, but But yeah.
Sexy.
It was something. It was appreciation. I got this. Maybe it wasn't even a word.
Well, that's the thing. It's effort too, because I think that when we don't love ourselves and we forget to give ourselves that, then how can we expect our partners to if we don't love ourselves? And that's a lesson I constantly am learning.
Yeah. We know
we're never done learning. Thank you so much. Okay, you guys, everyone check out Dr. Lene St. John's book. It's called Read Me, A Parental Primer for the Talk. I have to ask you, we're going to get back to that. I'm going to give you all the call outs. This is all in the show notes for your book, but I have to ask you the five questions we ask all of our guests.
Ooh.
Cookie questions.
Okay.
Your biggest turn on?
Leather.
Biggest turn off?
Lace. And the funny thing is I gave him those lace, so maybe it's changing.
What makes good sex?
Communication.
Something you tell your younger self about sex and relationships.
Something I would tell my younger self. What would I tell my younger self? It's not as bad. The first time is not an indicator of what it's going to be in the future.
So great. Everyone tell your kids that right now. Number one sex tip.
Number one sex tip. Okay, I have two actually. Can I do two?
Yes, of course.
Share some gratitude with your partner. Show some appreciation because there might be something that they're doing that you really like and you want to encourage that. So share some appreciation. And then try out that fantasy with the bringing in your senses, like ground yourself and talk it through.
Yeah,
work together to create whatever the scenario is. And you might find something really funny, but try that.
I love it. That's great. Thank you, Lene St. John. You can find you at The Mama Sutra on Instagram and Twitter and themamasutra.net. And your book, Read Me, A Parental Primer for the Talk. This will be in our social media as well in our show notes. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me, Emily.
You guys, wherever you're listening now, it really helps if you look down at your app, SoundCloud, Google Play, Spotify, and just give us a 5-star review. So appreciate it. Your comments, your questions, remember, you can always reach out to me, feedback@sexwithemily.com. I'm working with my team to continue to bring you the same information that we always do, especially now when we need it more than ever. And my team is awesome. Thank you, Ken, Kristen, Elisa, Brian, our interns, producer Jamie, and Michael. Was it good for you? Email me, feedback@sexwithemily.com.